Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Traveling Principal Show. I'm your host, Joe Clossy. In the fourth episode this season, we are titling the show Reaching the Hard to Reach. I've been in a lot of different schools this year. I'm going to use actually two different data points of schools. One's a TK through five, the other one's a six to eight in two separate locations. And so using both points for our conversation, I'm going to dive into what I saw that worked well, what I saw that definitely did not work at all, some tips to common scenarios that I've been seeing, which, unless dealt with, could grow into systemic nightmares for schools and for staff. So enjoy this week's episode of the Traveling Principal Show titled Reaching the Hard to Reach. Okay, guys. So in New York, we called this working with the lowest third of your student population. In California, they define it as subgroups. Regardless of where you are in the world, what does your school staff do when trying to reach those that are the hardest to reach? Please remember to like and subscribe so you're kept up to date on all the new episodes. If you have any questions, please email me at joe@travelprincipal.com. And so let's dive right into it. I am excited and a little bit nervous about today's topic because it's going to check all the boxes and include all the buzzwords. And when that happens, folks, things can go a number of different ways. And what I mean is, we're not going to sugarcoat the obvious. I'm going to tell you exactly how I've been seeing it, what people have been struggling with, and why I think that is. I'm also going to share some common best practices and what you and your school could hopefully do to reach those that are the hardest to reach. And so, again, I'm using these two different schools, yet regardless, they are very much the same. And this part of the conversation is necessary because both have similar kids, although geographically really far away. Both have lots of the same issues. Both are unionized, both are Title I, both have great leaders and staff in place, which is key to all of this as well. So now that you have a snapshot with that helicopter going overhead, you have a bird's eye view of exactly what I'm talking about. So let's dive in to what I heard and what I actually saw as well. So let's start there. So first, just some obvious starting points here, because I hear technology at the forefront of a lot of issues. So here's my advice to you in a really transparent and clear way. Deal with that as a school. Get on the same page, use your people, and create committees of staff, parents, kids, and administrators, and sort it out. If you're going to ban it as a whole school. If you're going to allow it, and you're going to have exceptions, and a policy, and a place to store it, and people who do so, figure it out. Put it in writing that's very, very, very clear. Spend a lot of time communicating this with everybody. If you're going to do a digital citizenship curriculum, awesome. Get it out there. There's approved ones already on the state level that you could probably just use, but that being said, since I do hear that quite a bit, deal with that, please. Okay? Stop complaining about the kids using the phones and start figuring out what to do about it, first and foremost. Second, I know kids are tougher post-pandemic. I know schools struggled with resources, and that is an issue. I know unions are always a factor here in play as well. So what does all that mean? Well, we know kids are struggling. So why is that? Still the same question. What is the cause now? What programs then do you currently have in place to address those causes? What staff is dedicated to those programs? And what is a goal that you hope the staff in those programs attempt to achieve? Super simple. Really, what I'm saying here is in the middle school, the complaints were so often that the principal there said, "Who are these kids that are consuming our time and the subject of these complaints? What classes are they struggling in so we can refocus their attention to what matters most, which is learning?" And those questions revamped that complaint completely. Wow, I was so proud of that principal. There's two of them that are extremely like innovative in this approach, and I'm going to talk about it a little bit further. I'm even going to call them out, but I just definitely wanted to say, when you hear those complaints, as a leader, you can do something about it. If you are the educators, if you are the teachers that are making those complaints, speak to the people who need to hear them, not just everybody or anybody. I guess that's a better way to say it. So, do you know who the hardest to reach is at your site? Okay, that's a great place to start. Create a spreadsheet from your student information system, go to the counselor, ask the district, put in a ticket, whatever your system is, or your sources. Go there and find out this group, considering these following areas, and it is definitely not limited to just these: attendance, behavior, grades, retention, teacher feedback, administrative counseling records, parent records. I mean, IEPs, 504s. Create a team, call them the R&D squad, and they get the data and conduct your research and create ideas for development. The development of the programs that can support the needs of the students based on this comparison and patterns identified from your data, right? So when everybody's like, what do you do with your data? You can use your data. You can use district assessments. There's another one for you, right? You can use school assessments. Just make certain that you're transparent in your justification of why said students would be in the group of the hardest to reach. Right? This creates a starting point for you. Consider that as where you start your initiative. If you develop this committee and the initial data, that is your starting point. Whatever it is, be prepared to deal with that as your starting point. It could be disgusting, could be ugly, but at least you're doing something about it. And that's key, right? Okay, so let's dive into this now and go a little faster, because once you have identified these kids, there should be like the common subject. To statements made by the staff should be they disrupt the entire class. They are rarely there. I can't get them to do any work, or they just sit there and do nothing. This group of students is now your lowest third. This is the group of those that get thrown out most. They are maybe often late, often out, often in the office, in the halls. They exhibit the same characteristics that most others do that fall into this category, regardless of your school. And so, what are we going to do about it? I saw one school create an amazing program called Deployment. I was talking about this earlier. This is an intervention block of time where students are reselected into sections and learn core subjects from a different teacher, in addition to the regular one. So think of it as like a lab for science, but with a different teacher and in a different section of class of kids. Now, this opens doors to utilizing the data for your research and development team went through to modify instructional strategies such as individual assistance, peer-to-peer tutoring, skill-based instructional practice, scaffolded sessions such as a traffic light strategy, which I've talked about quite a bit. Project-based learning could be conducted during this time, and of course, always practice, practice, practice. However, staff then reassess using common assessments that must be graded in a timely manner and then digested by staff, tracked into patterns on a spreadsheet, and the process of informing and working with those that need it continues. Does all of that kind of make sense? It's not rocket science, right? So they have this block of time, they're working with these kids. Some questions like who is in each section has been a lot of fun. And fun by meaning some of them are doing like levels, homogeneous grouping. Some are doing scattered, heterogeneous grouping. Some inside of a heterogeneous class are like grouping. I mean, they're doing all kinds of things. Teachers are working with individual kids. There's a lot of explicit instruction. There's a lot of project-based learning. It's awesome, right? Staff then reassess, but if you're not grading in a timely manner, And then you're not utilizing those grades to impact what you're teaching next. It kind of is just busy work. I saw another school complain about the kids, to the point where I saw the union grow angry. I saw staff get hurt. I saw staff leave. I saw distrust. I saw a lack of focus on students being the eventual center of thought due to people not trusting or not knowing what's going to happen to leaders because of uncertainty. Why? Because nothing was done about that group, right? We were listening to the complaints, if that. Maybe that's where, because common pitfalls, lack of communication, right? Between the leaders and the staff. Lack of communication that is effective. Not, I sent an email and never heard back, or I left a voicemail and never heard back. Both are one-way means of communication efforts that are not effective communication since it never actually communicated with anyone on the other end. It was just an attempt and should not be misconstrued as actual communication. Notice I didn't say common planning time for staff or discussions within a staff on a persistent basis because I know that in both situations in the schools that I'm talking about, this was the case in one school and not in the other. I know this is tough to incorporate into a schedule. I also know elementary school teachers usually do not get a prep. I know what it takes in a public school setting that would make this happen. And that's wild to think could be done mid-year if it's fact if it's not factored in already, right? We're not transitioning like that in a public school. So I'm being realistic about it. If you can put in common planning time, you're gonna win. All of this stuff is possible. If you cannot, you're stuck with what you have, which is like your twice a month meeting. And you're gonna have to figure that out. That's the beginning of where you should start, though. Almost like if you think about how many times we met, if you want to think about how to use the data on a district level or on a school-wide level, how many times are we communicating as a school this year? Then we tried this. How many times did we communicate this year, like the school that's doing right now? I would wonder if you took a look at those 2 years and you took a look at all of the same data points, attendance, retention, everything, what would be your difference? What is the impact of that communication? Okay, here's another huge one: lack of professional development. Without knowing what to do or how to work with said students or address the concerns and issues that your school is having, your site will only be stagnant at best. Okay, professional development is something that all schools and staff should regularly have. Aren't we all lifelong learners? Why is this so hard to understand? Do principals and assistant principals need to know it all? No, they don't. They aren't expected to either. In fact, I was known for asking. That was my talent. I would ask all the time what to do when I didn't know. Most times I asked, even when I did, just so I can also say, well, yeah, I know I did that because, like double checking. You could also provide resources for parents. Oh my gosh. Them working with troubled youth at home and creating intervention processes for those that need it. Why not? What to do ASAP if you're in this situation? Begin. Start early and start right now. You can start this right now. Create your data sets, first step. Create a committee, second step. Create a goal, third step. Create meetings and begin to get the ball rolling. PLCs are an amazing addition to a school culture if they are done correctly. I saw a district in Central California that uses PLCs, and within the schools that have them, certain ones are rolling them out different. Guess which one is doing it effectively? The school I'm talking about here. And when compared to the dialogue from a district in Palm Desert, which does not have PLCs, it's night and day. Initiatives, ideas, planning, inquiry, parent meetings, IEP celebrations, you name it. During that time, it's growth and development defined by the day. Which, since I just said it, I also want to say it's time to celebrate when you're doing this. Every week, celebrate your efforts, track it or don't. Just call out those that are working hard, doing what's right by your students, and showing efforts that are either above and beyond or really improving. Celebrate the kids too. Celebrate the parents. Celebrate everyone. What you're doing, and I want you to focus on this for a second. What you're doing is creating a community around a topic and driving the force of growth. This is the root of culture. Here's another one for you. Don't forget your ELD. right? Don't forget your ELD efforts. Everything begins, English language development, everything begins with reading, writing, speaking, and listening. Sorry, math. It's absolutely necessary as well and super crucial to our survival, but we speak the numbers and someone hears it, you write them down and someone reads it, so relax. Address your parental concerns as well. Perhaps survey them if you don't know what they are. You know, you could be really disconnected from what's going on. You could assume that you know, but because you may not live in that environment of the school, you do not. Engage your broader community on that note and see if other businesses are looking to mentor or looking to volunteer or looking to help. And your school can provide that element and perhaps work on a common goal together to foster the belongings and purpose behind what your school means to the actual place that it's in. Most importantly, and I cannot say this enough, most importantly, you have to reflect in this process. If you're trying to reach those that are hardest to reach, it's not going to be a one-size-fits-all. It's not going to be a one-time chance. You're going to have to reflect. Talk with your people about this and be prepared to be wrong. Be prepared for discussions that may take things and turn them upside down. Don't be attached to something because you thought of it or because it of a reason that is not about your students, please. But reflect on what works and share it out, and reflect on what doesn't and pivot. I hope that some of these are resonating with you guys because I tried to talk about what I saw, what works, what didn't, and what you could do. So thank you guys so much for listening. My name is Joe Clossy, and I'm happy to help you implement any of this. I took this query for the basis of this episode off of a Reddit question that a leader had asked, and I ran with it. If you'd like to email me at joe@travelprincipal.com, I can help you in any way that you need. My handle on Reddit is travelprincipal, r/principles. Check it out, r/eduvideos, educated videos. Check that out too. Got the shows on there. I can come to your school, just like I did with the others as well. Just ask. It provides excellent opportunities for growth for all of us, really. So, folks, thanks for watching another Traveling Principal show. In closing, I have to say this. If you don't do something about your biggest issues, what else are you doing that is more important? See you next time.